everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, everybody's excited about the upcoming eclipse. We'll talk to David Levy, the comet discoverer, and a guy that I think has seen probably as many as anybody in the world. It's just unbelievable how many he has visited and seen, witnessed solar eclipses. But I think it's a week from today.
The 8th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
what about,
no,
would you ask him for me about the Devil's Comet that may also be visible during the time of the eclipse, because the moon will be darkening the sun enough that this so-called Devil's Comet might be visible?
We'll ask him about it.
Maybe I'm throwing a monkey wrench into the works.
No, you can remind me as we get a little bit closer, but that's coming up at about 12:30. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, which is buckmastershow.com. Not only can you hear the program, but you can also, and the eclipse is not a week from today. It's Monday. It's April 8th. It's like just about 4 days away. So it'll be very timely what David Levy has to say. And totality might be certainly impacted by cloud cover in much of the United States, where certainly in the East they're having terrible weather. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. He is the lone Republican on the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. He represents the 4th Pima County Supervisorial District, Steve Christie. Mr. Christie, Supervisor Christie, how are you, and how was that hip replacement?
Well, it's excellent. I'm doing very well, and thank you for asking. I'm walking with no pain, and I'm about 99% returned. I think the biggest impediment to recovery and problem that I've had with recovery is my expectations of recovery. I felt like I should get out of the hospital bed and run a marathon after the surgery, but that's not how it works, and I have to be patient, and I've been very focused on my recovery, and it's paid off because I'm feeling great and doing just fine and almost 100% back. But thanks for asking.
Wow, sounds like it was a successful surgery. All right, can you give us an update? There were 3 candidates for the Pima County Treasurer's Office, Green Valley Justice of the Peace. Ray Carroll has dropped out, according to our friends at the Green Valley News. That leaves former Deputy Pima County Treasurer Patty Davison, who says she would not, if she's appointed to Beth Ford's position, Beth leaving in a couple of days, retiring after a bunch of terms as treasurer. But Patty says she's not going to run for the job in November, but Deputy Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley said he is running, and this is the gentleman, former state lawmaker, that Beth Ford strongly suggests that the board, you and your colleagues, appoint.
That's correct. You pretty much surmised the whole situation. One thing to keep in mind is some years ago when Sheriff Clarence Dupnik retired, he urged the board and those that were involved in the process to appoint his deputy, his equivalent of a deputy, which was Chris Nanos. Of course, Clarence Dupnik had been there for decades, and the board respected his judgment and his request, and that's how Sheriff Danos was appointed. So in this particular case, Beth Ford, as you point out, has served, I think, 24 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She, of course, has a real intimacy and depth with the office, and she feels that it would be best in the hands of Chris Ackerley, and I'm urging my colleagues to respect her request, just as the other boards did for Clarence Dupnik's. So I'm hoping that that Chris Ackerley will take over as treasurer, and that he'll be able to run for a complete term on his own.
So there's not going to be a forum or anything for these two remaining candidates, is there?
No, there is. There's going to be a League of Women Voters. I don't have the date in front of me, but it's coming up shortly, and it's like from 6 to 7 in the evening, and it'll be virtually. They're going to have a League of Women Voters forum on this.
Okay. So the decision for you and your colleagues is then a couple of weeks away. Is that correct?
Yes, the next board meeting, which will be the third Tuesday of the month.
In my stack of county stuff, I've got in front of me here a huge stack, and I'll be keeping it handy for the interview tomorrow because we have Pima County Administrator Jan Lusher will be our Friday focus interview, and joining me in the questioning, Caitlin Schmidt. Schmidt of the Tucson Agenda, the online news service. They're doing a great job over there. So that's tomorrow. But anyway, I know you're an animal lover. You've got to be concerned. Pima County Animal Control is at 142% of capacity.
Yeah, that sounds awful scary, doesn't
yeah.
it? And very, very concerning. And I'm hoping that the community will step up and think of the pack when looking for dogs and other animals and cats. 142% really, you know, that's just critical stage. And I think the community should hopefully is being made aware of this and will react accordingly and help out pack and save some of those animals and take them home. You picture in your mind what all the crates and cages look like in the facility, and it's overcrowded to the max, and it really is a very frightening and unhealthy situation, and I hope it'll be addressed quickly by the community.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring it up early on, and because I do think it is of importance, and let the public know that this is a very critical situation, and there are a bunch of dogs that could get on the unfortunate list of being in line. They may have to put some animals down if they can't get this situation under control. So, folks,
of course, we want to avoid that at all costs.
So, folks, please consider a visit to 4000 North Silverbell Road to the Pima Animal Care Center. And all dogs and puppies are currently free to adopt. So there you go. All right.
I just came across where the League of Women Voters forum for the county treasurer will be held on April 11th at 6 p.m. And I'm sure there's more notices that are coming through on that.
All right. So the latest on we did get funding to avoid the so-called street releases of migrants. Is that the latest?
Well, temporarily. Apparently, we got an infusion of $12 million that apparently is projected to last till August. I think we're just going to get, you know how we have all these continuing resolutions to keep the government operating in Washington while we're getting the same type of situation with Casas Elias and the Drexel Road Welcoming Center. I think it's just a temporary fix, and we're going to get right back into the same situation of, the sky is falling and hair on fire of street releases. But the issue is that at this particular point, and I've been saying this for years now, this would be a great opportunity for us to wean ourselves off of the addiction of taking government money to welcome asylum seekers and other migrants into this country when we know that there's a very good chance that the facilities that are accommodating these folks are not going to have the funding and we'll be right back in the same condition. So now we've got from here until August that I believe we should ramp down all our efforts, make it clear that we're going to be out of, as Administrator Lesher agrees with me, that out of the asylum seeking business, and ramp down our efforts and our activities to bring in folks from other places around the world into Pima County. We're basically just a travel agency, according to what we are hearing. We're just providing traveling opportunities and accommodations for folks to go into the heartland of the United States. This would be a great time to shut things down and move to terminating all efforts so that we're not faced with this crisis anymore of having to get money and beg for money and run to Washington and have a situation where we're facing street releases. We can get out of this, and the only way to get out of it effectively is to bite the bullet and stop it and
all right,
shut things down.
Before we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, what's the latest on the snow update up at Mount Lemmon?
Yeah, I wanted some good news on this show with you, too. We got 6 inches of snow from the last storm.
Good.
And 2 more inches are expected tomorrow night. And the General Store reports that it's busy in Summer Haven. The Lodge is adding parking, so be patient to park because there's going to be some more coming. Ski Valley ended its season on March 18th, but the lift is operating round-trip rides, but it's not stopping at the top.
Oh.
And with the winter precipitation, while great for the Summer Haven's water tanks, it means that there will be abundant wildfire fuel when the seasonal heat arrives, so we have to be very cautious about that. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Great water and moisture, but it brings on the fuel as things heat up during the summer.
I know.
Of course, when you're going up to the mountain, stop at the visitor centers and get the famous District 4 trash bags. It's important you don't leave your trash. Our office is trying to make sure people are aware of that and giving them tools to keep the trash that they own with them and take it back down the mountain and not leave it up there in Summer Haven and Mount Lemmon.
The weeds at my place are just out of control. I mean, it's great to have it's been a very moist.
Yeah.
In fact, our rainfall, I just checked at the airport, the official total, we're about a 5 and 5 plus inches, which is now double our normal average. So that's good news there.
Yeah, that part is good news, but again, on the double-edged sword, it also breeds the weeds and the fuel as things dry out, and that's where we have to make sure that we do our firewise efforts and keep our areas clean and free of debris and weeds so we don't have to face a fire catastrophe again.
All right. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. We'll have more with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie after we take our first break. But Mona's is at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for lunch right now. They're open for breakfast, 6:30 in the morning. And their website's monasdanishbakery.com. An added enhancement at Mona's, they are serving alcoholic beverage. So you can have a beer with your lunch. I guess you could have a beer with your breakfast if you want. Or you can have wine, mimosa, the wine and orange juice, whatever you want at Mona's Danish Bakery. More after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport.
TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, when we do our telephone interviews. That service presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. On our live line is Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, Republican representing the 4th Supervisorial District. So what's going to happen now with the Pima County Jail, the Blue Ribbon Committee, has done their work, and now is another committee being formed, Steve Christie?
Yes, and that's a good question, and I don't quite know the answer to that. We listened to the county administrator's ideas and plans. She wanted to bring together her staff that had dealt with a lot of issues regarding the criminal justice system, the judicial system, the law enforcement administration of incarceration with the jails, and kind of like hold a series of meetings over the next few weeks to kind of gather what things worked, what things are successful, what are not working as well, and kind of trying to glean from their experience and their knowledge of all of the areas that are related to this, and kind of come up with a general idea of what we should pursue. And then at that particular point, if I'm correct in my understanding of what the administrator was saying, is that then there would be appointments made to form another commission that would further look into these things. I was disappointed in the original Blue Ribbon Commission. They were great citizens that citizen volunteers that gave their time, effort, and energy to this issue and spent a lot of hours and a lot of effort to try to figure out whether to repair the jail or rebuild it. They gave information on estimated costs of what it would cost to repair it and what it would cost to build a new one, but they didn't make any recommendation one way or the other. So that kind of fizzled out, and now the administrator is looking to get another iteration of a commission, but with a kind of a different purpose. My biggest concern is that whatever commission is established, or however its makeup is established, that we make sure that it stays focused on at this particular point, repairing the jail and making it safe inside and out for on both sides of the bars for an operation. And not let special interest groups inject or insert their political narrative to bog matters down. The last time they did that, they actually disrupted a meeting of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and it had to be disbanded and canceled because of their disruption. We can't afford to have that, and it should not be allowed. And I'm also very concerned that the sheriff has a hands-on experience with whatever the commission makeup is, and basically leads them by the hand, goes through the jail and say, we need this fixed, this fixed, this fixed, and that adjusted, pointing out specific things that he feels that must be done in order for him to run the jail. And it must be noted that the Board of Supervisors has no authority, no special interest group has authority, no judicial system has authority over the jail. The jail is run solely and singularly by the sheriff. It's his or her responsibility, and not in the purview of special interest groups or other boards or agencies to tell the sheriff how to run his or her jail. And that's my biggest concern, that it'll become bogged down with political ideology, such as reducing the jail population, reimagining incarceration, reducing penalties and any kind of punishment. This is not the purview of somebody outside the law enforcement area. It's in the purview of the sheriff and the sheriff alone and his correction officers.
So you're saying just let the sheriff, somebody go with the sheriff who can make a decision on what needs to be fixed and then fix it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, at least point it out and at least note it and catalog it and bring it back to the board with a dollar figure attached, because it appears that everybody thinks, and it's a very real situation, that, you know, upwards of a billion with a B dollars to build a new jail would be a real heavy load and a big push to try to get that through. So the next best thing is to really examine the condition of the physical plant of the current jail, and the sheriff has to be instrumental in telling any commission what needs to be done, what needs to be fixed, what needs to be added to or removed. But the sheriff needs to have a hands-on relationship with the commission, so the commission fully understands what the sheriff needs and what the correction officers need, and quite frankly, what the prisoners need as far as the facility, not programs, not reductions or reimagining incarceration, but as far as the facility and the facility alone is concerned.
You've been very outspoken about this new ordinance that your colleagues passed. You voted against it, aimed at so-called straw purchasers, or people who get around gun laws by buying guns for people who are prohibited from owning them.
Well, yes, I found it very confusing and almost surreal as to what the process involved, and it appeared to me the best way I could figure it out and the best way I could make any sense of it is that if you own a firearm and for whatever reason you find that that firearm is missing, this ordinance makes it incumbent upon you, and bear in mind, you could be a stellar example of citizenry and be just a perfect citizen, no records, nothing. You just happen to own a firearm, which is your right, and you find it missing. This ordinance makes it incumbent upon you, a good citizen, to report that it's stolen. And once you report that it's stolen, you're subject to a fine of up to $1,000 for it being stolen. Hmm. That makes no sense to me, and maybe I'm not reading it right, but the thing that also comes into play is that there's been numerous iterations of the same type of ordinance in the city and in other areas in the state that have been challenged in the courts and have lost. And this one is destined to be in the same dustbin, because it is the legislature and the state regulations that override anything that any jurisdiction can even come up with. So right off the bat, this ordinance is in violation of state regulations, and that's going to be the deciding factor that's going to basically going to put this ordinance out of business.
Of course you are. You've told us many times on the program how much you enjoy being a Pima County supervisor and we have elections coming. You're standing for re-election. Will you have an opponent?
I will. This?
Okay. Someone was able to gather enough signatures to make a challenge?
Apparently so.
All right. And we'll have to leave it right there. We've got the budget hearings coming up in Pima County. Everybody's going to be asking probably for more money. How's the county's financial picture real quickly?
Well, they're having a very difficult time adjusting to post-COVID monies and infusions of money from the federal government. And the budget got bloated with all of the programs that the federal government was allowing Pima County to pursue and giving Pima County the money to do it. Like any government agency that gets started up by a grant of some sort like the federal government is providing, that program becomes institutionalized with people being hired and departments being put together and policies being implemented. And as I say, institutionalized. Now we're in a position where that COVID money's going away and there's a lot of gnashing of teeth that they don't have that money anymore. And now they're faced with making very difficult decisions of cutting what was provided by COVID money that is no longer.
All right.
So it's going to be interesting.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Perfect time of year to do some spring gardening. We are having just such a lovely, the only downside with the weather, a little bit coming up tomorrow with a wind, I think it's a wind advisory, could have some blowing dusts and gusts up to 40 miles an hour. But this is a great time of year to do gardening at Green Things for all of you. Get your gardening supplies there, of course, all of your plants and the pottery. They've got an incredible selection of pottery on their 13-acre site. They're at 3384 East River Road. The website, greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business is zocalovillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business. Jan and Jack, I know them personally. The owners, great people. They really hands-on business. They are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And another quick mention, I don't want to make it too quick because I love these people as well. I love all my sponsors, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Speaking of kind of the spring and moisture, the Gila National Wilderness looking real good, greened up and ready for you to do some hiking. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the go-to starting place before you make the three-hour drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. All right, let's welcome now for his monthly visit to our program, renowned comet discoverer, the Buckmaster contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine, and now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization, Dr. David Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, and a guy that probably has seen, I don't know, how many total solar eclipses have you seen, David? First of all,
Bill, it's good to be back on your program today.
Great to have you with us.
If I see this one, which is kind of doubtful at the moment because of the weather prospects, it'll be my 12th total eclipse.
Wow.
It'll be my 12th if I see any of it. I think I'll see some of it. I don't know if I'm going to see the total phase or not, but we're going to make an effort. We're leaving tomorrow, and I'm hoping that everyone in Tucson gets a good view of the partial eclipse. You're going to get quite a show here. It's not going to be total, but you're going to get about two-thirds of the sun is going to be covered by the moon. It's going to be a nice crescent, and you'll notice that the sky is going to be a little bit darker at the maximum eclipse.
The last total eclipse of the sun over North America, the continental North America, was August 21.
Wendy and I saw that.
Yeah, 2021.
On that day, she told me how much she really was looking forward to seeing this one coming up. Mm. So I'm going to need to see it for both of her. Yep. And this is kind of tough for me right now.
I can imagine. And it will be a long time before the next one, and a lot of us baby boomers probably, safe to say, probably will not be around in 2045. So that's the...
Oh, yeah, we'll be, you and I will be around. We'll be, what, 106 or something?
I think I'd be about, well, upper 90s, something like that.
Upper 90s. And what are you going to talk about on your show when you're in your upper 90s?
I don't know. Let's talk a little bit about this. What makes this a real special total eclipse? I think that, is it totality? I think it's over 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's the main thing. It's a long eclipse.
Yeah.
It won't be the longest that I've ever seen. The longest I've ever seen was in Mexico in 1991, which was over 7 minutes, almost 7 minutes.
Wow.
And but 4 minutes is pretty darn good. And if it's clear, we're going to get to see the prominences, the atmosphere of the sun, the inner one, the chromosphere, and the outer one, the corona. And it's really going to be really pretty exciting. If it's cloudy, we will still see the shadow of the moon, the great shadow coming at us, and it'll just darken the clouds like night. And one of the advantages of it being clouded out, if we are, is that you get a much darker eclipse. The one eclipse that I saw that was clouded out was 1970 in Nova Scotia. And so help me, Bill, I could not see my fingers in front of my hand. It was that dark. It was really dark.
Are you kidding? Wow. What an experience. And of course, the animals are very confused. The birds are, oh man, it's time to go to bed.
Well, and the birds you're going to get, even if it's cloudy, because they're going to notice the dropping in light. And it's a lot more than you get on a cloudy day or even a stormy one. But if you're getting both, you're going to get a really sharp drop in the light level, and you're going to get, and the birds and the hippopotamuses and the dinosaurs and everything else you're going to see are going to be pretty puzzled about it. And you might even get a brontosaurus coming up to say, so what happened to us 65 million years ago? And you'll have to tell them, well, I'll tell you after the eclipse. I want to watch this first.
Where are you going for to get into the path?
I will be in near a little tiny Texas town called Leakey, Texas.
Hmm.
And the forecast right now is mostly cloudy, but mostly after 1. So we got a shot. If it's an hour later, we still have a shot at seeing this thing.
What about Tucson? You said that we would have, I think, 3/4. What do you know approximately the time here in Tucson for that?
I'm not exactly sure of the time, but at noon, you want to be out watching it. And don't forget, there are 4 things that I want you to remember. If you're in Tucson, you need to wear your eclipse glasses. Do not look at the sun directly, because the sun will be partially gone, and so you're going to want to stare at it, and that's not good for your eyes. So you really want to have the eclipse glasses. They're available almost everywhere right now, but you want to stock up on those and get some for your friends. And if you're trying to go to the path of totality like I am, then if you're really close to it, Bill, like if you live in Texas, not far from Dallas, you got to go into Dallas where it's going to be total. The closer you are, a 99.9% eclipse is still a partial eclipse.
Yeah.
You need to get in your car and drive into the path of totality, brave the traffic, and really see something. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are once in a lifetime, but, Bill, this really is. And if you have a chance to see the total eclipse, don't pass it up. And the third one is, if it's, which I've already said, if it's cloudy, you're going to get a much darker total eclipse. And I can't remember what the 4th one was.
All right, but we're quickly running out of time, and here is the monthly quote of the month from David Levy.
Okay, it's from Macbeth, and it goes like this. It doesn't even mention the words, but you know what it's about. By the clock, 'tis day, and yet dark night strangles the traveling lamp. Is it the night's predominance or the day's shame that darkness does the face of earth and tomb when living light should kiss it? And Shakespeare really knew what he was writing about. You know he was writing about a total eclipse of the sun. And probably the one in 1605, which happened the year before he wrote Macbeth.
All right. David Levy, I want to wish you the best. Good luck with the eclipse viewing on Monday.
Well, thank you, and we'll talk with you next month. I'll give you a report.
Thank you very much. Okay, all right, bye. We'll take a break right here. Buckmaster has... Attorney Don Luce is in the house for his monthly visit to the program. Always lots to talk about with Don right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. the RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, joined in studio by attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Don Luce, the Buckmaster Show legal contributor and author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you.
Never a shortage of things to talk about this time of year with the legislature in session. This is a really interesting legislature because they're sending things to the governor, even though they know they're probably going to be get the old veto stamp. But we'll talk about the vetoes in a few minutes. But what about this new one, this proposal to recognize basically man and woman as the only genders and make it in concrete in Arizona law?
Well, speaking of vetoes,
this one has veto all over.
This is Senate Bill 1628. Under the terms of this bill, Arizona law would be changed so that there was only reference to sex, not gender. The thinking of the proponents is that gender suggests self-identification.
Yes.
Whereas sex is biological sex. You're either born male or female. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a binary situation. Senate Bill 1628, however, was approved on a party line vote, 31 to 28. So what that would suggest to me is that the governor is not going to support the bill if it ends up on her desk for signature. And as we'll talk about in a little while, she recently vetoed 15 bills that had been sent to her by the legislature. And we're in a state where the legislature is controlled by one party. The executive branch is controlled by another party. Both are necessary to enact new laws. And we're seeing this year where, as you mentioned, a lot of bills are being sent to the governor, but not a lot of bills are being signed.
No.
A lot of bills are being vetoed. And
no.
I think 1628 is going to have that same fate. In addition to which, there's another problem that the proponents of this legislation have, and that is a federal judge blocked Arizona from enforcing a 2022 law that bars students whose, quote, biological sex at birth was male from participating in girls' sports. So finding that that was violative of Title IX, which is the federal statute that bars discrimination based on sex in educational opportunities. So even if through some mysterious process, 1628 were signed into law, I think the proponents would still have the hurdle of showing that the law doesn't violate Title IX, given the ruling that had been made on an earlier law that barred students whose biological sex at birth was male from participating in girls' sports.
From that to tamales. The sale of homemade tamales and certain other items that have been classified as cottage food products will become legal again in Arizona, won't they?
They will. And, you know, interestingly, if you're comparing these two bills, 1628 was passed along party lines, but the tamale bill was bipartisan. Both Democrats and Republicans voted for it.
They all got on board.
Yeah. Speaking of tamales at lunchtime is really unfair, but we're going to do it anyway. So the tamale law was actually sent, a very similar version was sent to the governor last year, and it was a bipartisan effort as well. The governor vetoed it, pretty much making a lot of legislators mad because they thought that the tamale law was good for the public and would also help a lot of small business people be able to sell things from their kitchens that currently they're not able to sell. So by way of background, it's been permissible to sell, well, basically baked and confectionery foods.
Cookies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If
cake,
you go to a
banana
farmer's
bread,
market,
yeah.
Yep. You'll see breads,
yes.
Sweets, fruits, jams, jellies, but you won't see tamales.
No.
Or any other food that requires temperature control.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you won't is because currently it's illegal to sell those foods that are made in a home kitchen. This is going to change, but it's not going to change until the summertime. And what I mean by that is, even though the governor signed the bill into legislation, it won't take effect until 90 days after the legislature session ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always undetermined at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it ends sometime in late May or early June. Add 90 days to that, and then the bill becomes effective. So what does the bill provide? So it says that food made in a home kitchen, like tamales, can be sold without the requisite health inspections, right?
Yeah.
This bill had been opposed to passage by the Arizona Restaurant Association in its previous form because home kitchen wasn't well defined.
Mm-hmm.
Under the current version, home kitchen is defined as a space limited to 1,000 square feet. So that cleared the hurdle from the Arizona Restaurant Association, who thought there might be some kind of a commercial loophole, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So home kitchen is defined, and the new bill also has sort of beefed up labeling requirements. So the labeling requirements include that the product contain the list of ingredients,
mm-hmm.
the name of the person preparing the food,
mm-hmm.
and a disclaimer that the item may have been prepared in a kitchen that could have had allergens, including mm-hmm. pet allergens.
Mm.
So with those...
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. With those changes, as I mentioned, the Arizona Restaurant Association no longer opposed the bill. It got sent back to the governor on a bipartisan basis, and without explanation, she signed it last week, and it will take effect 90 days after the current legislative session ends.
I wonder, though, about the health issues, about temperature, and I don't know.
We'll see, won't we?
Yeah. Vetoes 15 so far.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And as we've mentioned on this show before, it's a really interesting situation when the legislature is controlled by one political party and the governor's office is controlled by a different political party, because, as you know, under our process, the legislature sends the bills to the governor and they do not become law unless the governor signs them. The legislature on its own does not have the ability to make laws. It can do one of several things. It can send bills to the governor for signature. Those then become laws. Or it can send proposals or initiatives, essentially putting them on the ballot for voters to vote on them. They then become laws. But the legislature itself can't create laws. So under this situation where the governor is a Democrat and the legislature is Republican controlled, you see a lot of vetoes. This year, we've had 18 so far. Mm-hmm. Last legislative session, which ended in 2023, there were 143 vetoes.
Oh, my
143
goodness.
Vetoes. Wow. So these are bills that were sent to the governor for signature. She refused to sign the bill, and in fact, she vetoed the bill. So what happens with the veto is the governor typically issues a little memorandum on why she vetoed the bill. The first one that I want to talk about is a bill that she vetoed that was sponsored by John Kavanaugh, who's a Republican from Fountain Hills. So this bill, which was Senate Bill 1073 and was vetoed, would have made it a felony for protesters to block a highway, bridge, or tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With a presumptive sentence of a year in state prison.
Mm-hmm.
There's already a bill or a law on the books that makes it a crime to do that. It's a misdemeanor, punishable by county jail time, if you block traffic in a way that creates an inconvenience or hazard. And so the governor said, "No, we already have a law on the books. This bill is unnecessary." Veto. The next one was actually sponsored by the House Majority Leader, Senate Bill. House Bill 2502, which would have essentially changed the eligibility requirements for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP.
Mm-hmm.
Under the bill, which again was vetoed, any able-bodied recipient younger than 60 and not employed would be required to participate in a work training program. Which would be available through the Department of Economic Security. Currently, there are about 94 individuals who participate under this legislation, which was not signed into law. That number would have increased to about 130,000. So these are examples of bills that were sent to the governor's office
right.
by the Republican-controlled legislature and vetoed.
All right, Don Luce, thank you very much. Luce Law, we appreciate coming in. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, on behalf of Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.